Chapter 9. Jesse climbed into his Explorer, which was still parked in the Grey Gull's lot, and waited for Tamara to drive away before checking himself out in his visor mirror. He supposed he looked about as good as anyone who felt like he did was going to look. He remembered what Tamara had said to him yesterday about his eyes. Only today, it really was the Visine that had cleared the red out. He'd given his face a quick shave after his shower and splashed on some extra Paco Rabanne in the hope it might cover the stink of scotch in his sweat, or at least distract people who got close to him. The coffee and Fioranol had helped more than he expected they would, but not so much that he felt like doing anything more than sleeping for a week. But he wasn't going to get any sleep, not for a while anyway. He started up the SUV and turned out of the lot. The address was on Berkshire Street in the oldest part of Paradise, where the wealthier folks in town had lived before moving their fortunes and their families up to the big manor houses on the bluffs. The homes in this part of town weren't very big by today's standards, certainly not as grand as the Victorian behemoths on the bluffs. But many of them had water views and were within walking distance of the quaint small shops in town. You were also close enough to the bridge to Stiles Island that you could jog over and back, if running was your thing. Lately, Bostonians and New Yorkers armed with hedge fund money and fantasies of a more rustic life had begun buying up the houses along Berkshire, Marblehead, Salem, and Salter Streets, a few of them converting the houses into B&Bs. 21 Berkshire faced Pilgrim Cove and had so far escaped the clutches of city transplants, but wouldn't much longer, given the for sale sign out front. Nor had it escaped the ravages of time and the weather. The old two-stories gray clapboards were in poor shape, chipped and flaking, some almost completely bare of paint and exposed to the elements. The steps up to the front door sagged in the middle. The windows were all single-pane affairs that probably rattled like mad in anything more than a stiff breeze. Jesse wasn't thinking about stiff breezes or real estate values when he turned off Marblehead onto Berkshire. Although he didn't yet know who the victim was or the nature of the homicide, he was already at work on the case, running through scenarios, asking himself questions. Which other houses on the street had the best views of 21? If there was gunfire, would anyone else on the street have heard it? If the crime occurred during daylight, how might the killer or killers have exited the house without being seen? If the killer or killers had a vehicle, in which direction would they have fled? Like that. But when he approached the house, he stopped all the speculation and prepared himself to deal with what the crime scene presented. Experience had taught him that making prejudgments before getting to the scene could blind you to the evidence, and he couldn't afford any more distractions than he was already dealing with. There were three Paradise PD cruisers parked out front. Molly's, because she was the responding officer. Peter Perkins's, because he was the only cop on the Paradise PD with forensics training. And Alicia's, because she was there to handle whatever task Molly gave her. Tomorrow's Wrangler Sahara was out front, as well as the medical examiner's vehicle waiting for the body. What confused Jesse was the fire department ambulance pulling away from the address, siren blaring. There wasn't usually much need for an ambulance at a homicide. Because it was Sunday morning and people were either still at church or at brunch after church, there wasn't much of a crowd. The siren would change that. Alicia, the newest addition to the force, was walking the tape and handling the few onlookers. She lifted the tape as Jesse approached.
Morning, Jesse.
What's the story with the ambulance?
A Mass Express delivery guy was found tied up and semi-conscious in the basement. That's why we got the call. He never showed back at his depot last night. Stades found his truck abandoned in Salem.
Jesse nodded. They retraced his route to see what packages got delivered, which ones didn't, and tracked him back here. I'll have to talk to him. What about the rest of it?
Weird.
Weird how?
Old woman in her bed, but she didn't die there. The house is a mess, but not much, if anything, seems to be missing. Molly and Peter are inside. They'll fill you in.
Jesse was proud of Alicia, only the second woman to join the Paradise PD. So far, so good.
The mayor and the board of selectmen had been less than thrilled at her hire, preferring someone with experience who was relocating, or a retired big city cop who brought his pension and benefits with him. Jesse could see their point of view, except he knew their real objection was to something they would never admit. Alicia was African-American, and Paradise was overwhelmingly white. He didn't think much of Mayor Walker and her minions, but he didn't think they were racists. They were small-town politicos, reflexively averse to anything that might upset their constituents. In the end, the mayor backed him up. Good thing Jesse didn't have to worry about pleasing voters. There was something else he liked about Alicia. She never asked him about his drinking or made a fuss about Diana's death. She seemed to intuit that those were subjects Jesse would just as soon not discuss, especially with a rookie. "All right, I'm going in. There's bound to be more of a crowd as folks get back from church, and after Robbie's guy used his siren. You need help, call Gabe. You don't have to clear it with me. Watch your step when you go in. There's a blood trail in the vestibule. I'll be okay out here." He was sure she would be. He was far less sure about himself. Chapter 10. When he got to the front door, he could feel the adrenaline kicking in. Even though he would pay a big price for it later, he was glad for the rush. It helped with the hangover. The only other thing that got his juices flowing like this was playing baseball on a big stage. And that part of his life had ended many years ago on a crappy infield in Pueblo, Colorado. Still, as much as he was energized, he never lost sight of the fact that someone had to die, often violently, for him to get this rush. He would have gladly traded in this feeling for there to never be another homicide within the confines of Paradise. But the universe didn't work that way. There was no one out there to bargain with, except maybe the devil. And Jesse knew how those deals usually turned out. The front door was ajar, and Jesse was careful not to use his hand to push it open or to grab the knob, though it looked like it had already been dusted. He nudged it open with his elbow and saw Molly standing in the hallway, scribbling notes on the pad she carried with her. He also saw the trail of dried blood Alicia had warned him about leading from the vestibule, down the hallway, and around the corner to where, he guessed, the stairs to the basement were located. There were smudged footprints and two different shoe prints in the blood, partials, but enough to make out size and manufacturer. Jesse didn't assume that the two shoe prints were from two suspects. For all he knew, one of the prints came from the Mass Express guy. It would be foolish to draw any conclusions. "What do we have?" Jesse asked, getting Molly's attention. "Peter's already taken samples, photos, and done the preliminaries upstairs and on this level. He's in the basement now, but Lundquist and the state forensics team will be here soon enough." Jesse felt the heat rising under his skin. It was his call whether or not to bring in the stadies. Ever since Healy had retired, he was less apt to rush to ask for help from the state police. He liked Lundquist, Healy's acting replacement, well enough. Healy had given Lundquist his full backing. It was just that Jesse was slow to give his trust. He'd found that trust given slowly was like a smart investment. It paid dividends over a long period, and when it went wrong, the damages were minimized. "Who told you to call in the stadies?" "Come on, Jesse," she said. "Do you have any idea of how out of it you were yesterday after Suit and Elena left the reception? I'm surprised you can even stand up. And for goodness sakes, we tried calling you for a long time there. What would you have done? I was covering for you in case the mayor got wind of it. This way I could tell her you instructed me to get the state cops right on it." He knew she was right, that he owed her his thanks, not his anger, which should have been reserved for himself. Molly had covered for him over the years, on the few occasions he had lost control of his drinking. Beyond that, she had made the right call. If the rest of the crime scene looked anything like the hallway, Peter Perkins would be overwhelmed. "Where's the body?"
"Upstairs," Molly pointed with her pen. "The ME is still up there with her."
"ID?"
"Maud Kane, 91. She's lived here her whole life."
Jesse put up his palm. "Wait, Kane as in Zachariah Kane?"
"That's right. Cain is in the man the library is named for. They go back to before paradise was paradise. Jesse knew some of the local history, but not as much as lifetime residents like Molly. Sometimes, as he had learned when the bodies of Ginny Connolly and Mary Kate O'Hara were found in a collapsed building on Trench Alley, small towns hid their pasts from outsiders. That's why Molly, besides being the best cop he had, was invaluable. Why didn't the Canes build up on the bluffs like the Salters and Rutherfords? They gave a lot of their fortune away to do good works. Their money was pretty much gone by the time Maud inherited this place from her mother. I see she was selling the house. She was old. I don't think she could handle the upkeep anymore. Okay, I'm going up. And Molly, yeah. Thanks. As he walked to the staircase, he noticed the broken shards of porcelain, a few caked with dried blood, and the general destruction of the house. It didn't take a seasoned homicide detective to figure out that whoever killed Maud Cain had come looking for something. The question was, what did they come looking for? And had it been found?